Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing just fine, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing swell. I tried to go into tonight's case very open-minded. I tried to go into it giving everybody the benefit of the doubt. I hate to say that I didn't come out of my research feeling very good about some of these people. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
This is a highly requested case, and like any other case that involves children, you can't help but get emotional while you're researching it. This is the case of the disappearance of Sky Elijah Metawala.
And this is still an open case, a little different for us to cover it.
Right. The date in question, November 6th, 2011, Bellevue, Washington. And a woman by the name of Julia Buryokova is driving her son, Sky, who's 2 years old at the time, to the hospital. Also in the vehicle is his sister, Miley, who's four. Julia says that Sky is ill and she wants to get him to the doctor. But somewhere along the way, she says that her vehicle runs out of gas and stalls. So she parks at essentially a street corner, exits the vehicle with her daughter, leaving her son buckled into his car seat, and she walks a mile to a gas station. And at the gas station, she calls a friend. It's a close friend of hers who shows up and drives her back to the vehicle. So they're gone from the vehicle for a good amount of time. It could be about an hour.
I've seen anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour.
And when they get there, Sky is not in his car seat, nowhere to be found. This would seem to be a simple case of either the child somehow got out of the vehicle and wandered off, or someone took the child. And we'll get into the particulars of it in a bit. That's the summary as to Julia's story of what happened to Sky. She had left him at the vehicle and taking her daughter to a gas station.
She didn't lock the doors?
My understanding was the door that was right next to Sky was unlocked.
She didn't have a cell phone on her either.
She forgot her identification and cell phone at her place. So she had to walk all the way to the gas station to make a phone call.
I guess we'll get into the particulars later because I got some problems right there off the bat.
I'm going to give some basics on this family. The father of Sky is Solomon Metalwala. He was born in Pakistan. He would meet a young lady when he was 21. He met her when she was 15. Her name is Julia Buryukova. She was born in Russia, but she's Ukrainian. They met at a gas station. He invited her to a party, and that's pretty much where they started dating. They would go on to have two children. Their first child was Miley Metalwala, and then later they would have a son, and his name was Sky Elijah Metalwala. Now, he was born September 6th of 2009. Not much to say other than Solomon and Julia, before they had children, they spoke with his, or he spoke with his mother and got a loan, and they opened a small grocery store. It was King Street Cafe. That was open for about 5 years before they started having financial difficulties. The store was doing really well early on, and they would make a good amount of money, but later on, another grocery store opened up next door that had a deli, and he said that it really hurt his business. It's not the only thing that hurt his business, but it was probably the primary reason why he was getting less customers.
So she gets back to the car, and her son is gone. She's with her friend. What do they do?
Well, the police have to be called. They need to investigate this. They end up searching a 20-block radius, going door to door. They have people helping them even. This massive search turns up nothing. They bring in dogs, check for Sky's scent. They find the scent in the car. The car she's driving belongs to her brother. It's a 1998 silver Acura Integra. The dogs find the scent in there, but they can't find it anywhere else outside the vehicle or leading away from the vehicle. Someone would, you know, they would lead you to believe that if Sky had been in the vehicle, that maybe he was transferred to another vehicle.
Like somebody picked him up and moved him because he didn't get out and walk. Otherwise, they would have smelled it.
Right.
People might think we put way too much faith and trust into these dogs, but these dogs are amazing. And I truly think that if they didn't detect him anywhere outside the vehicle, that he wasn't there or he was picked up and carried off.
Now, Julia consents to have her place searched, the car searched. Other than that, she pleads the fifth. She invokes her Fifth Amendment rights, and she doesn't really want to talk.
She lawyers up.
Yes, the police will have her go down to the station, but her lawyer shows up and ends any possibility of an interview. The police will take the vehicle. They will take out the gas tank. They will search the entire vehicle. The inspection turns up 2.2 gallons of gas in the tank.
And turns over right away and seems to be perfectly functional.
They can't find anything mechanically wrong with the vehicle at all. So now they're concerned because the mother of this missing boy stated that she had run out of gas and stalled, and that's why she went to the gas station. The interesting thing is when she's at the gas station, she never tries to buy gas, and she has no gas can, nor does she try to buy a gas can. She just calls her friend to pick her up and then drive her back.
What were they going to do? Just pick up Sky and then leave? Like, she never says, so we don't know.
So she doesn't look very good at this point. They ask Julia to take a polygraph test, and she refuses. Her lawyer says she's too upset right now. There's no point in taking a polygraph.
Or speaking to police at all about any detail.
Now, Solomon, the father of Sky, he will take a polygraph. He has no problem taking a polygraph. His first polygraph is inconclusive, and they believe it's because he was under so much stress. At this point in time, when his boy went missing, he and Julia were going through a divorce.
Yeah, they had separated a year before.
And he really didn't see his children during that time. So he was very, very upset at finding out that his boy was gone. no one knew where he was. And knowing about the massive search they conducted, they had the dogs, they can't turn up anything.
And wasn't the police the ones that informed him that his son was missing? Not even his ex-wife?
Well, at the time, they were still married, right? Good.
But not even Julia informed him.
No. So he took another polygraph the next day. Those results have not been publicized, but...
The guy wasn't there. He hadn't been around. He hadn't seen the child in how long?
It had been quite some time. Over that past year, he really didn't... He didn't see his kids, so...
The last time he saw his kid was months. I think it was over 6 months, might have been closer to 8 months, was the last time he saw Sky.
So they start checking into this couple, the police do. And one of the things that turns up is that when Sky was just 3 months old, they had left him in a locked vehicle for 55 minutes as they were shopping in a Target store.
Both Julia and her husband.
And on that day, it was 27 degrees out. So it was pretty cold. It wasn't until the authorities showed up and asked for the couple to be paged, did they go out and retrieve their child. As a result of that, they were cited for reckless endangerment, and they received 1 year probation, 10 hours of parenting classes, and 40 hours of community service.
That's a slap on the wrist, but okay.
Well, and I think the thinking here is that nothing bad happened, but leaving your child alone in a vehicle, sure, it's locked, but someone could just break the window.
It's 27 degrees out. It's not like they unintentionally did this. They were running into a store and forgot that the kid was in the car. No, they intentionally went shopping and left him in the vehicle.
So the police, the investigators, start to think, maybe that boy wasn't in the vehicle to begin with. They have a chance to talk with Sky's sister, Miley. And remember, she's 4 years old. She says, yes, he was in the car that morning.
But she's four. You're not getting anything useful out of that. Like, that's just, who knows?
And no one had seen Sky outside of Julia or her daughter or possibly her family for 6 months. And so you would have to believe their story that, yes, he's been around the whole time. The last time someone outside of that family had seen little Sky was when he was taken to a doctor 6 months before. It's been 6 months since anyone outside of Julia or her family has seen Sky.
A solid 2 weeks since anyone in the family had said they'd seen Sky. But we don't know how good their word is, you know, between 6 months and 2 weeks. We don't know. And it said that Julia would isolate herself or detach from her family and friends. Now, when I first read that, I didn't put that much stock into it because I thought, well, you know, sometimes I isolate myself in my house and I don't leave for a while, so I don't want to read too much into it. But as we get further along, it actually starts to make a little bit more sense.
Julia will email ABC News, and she said that her husband, Solomon, was a sadistic Muslim Pakistani. The only trouble with this is Solomon is a Christian.
Oh, at least get your bigotry right.
Solomon is devastated, according to people that were around him at the time, but he's very cooperative, and he starts leading search efforts to help locate his son. Her family, including Julia, her mother, her brother, her friends, they are not involved in the search efforts at all.
They're keeping a very low profile. They're not speaking to anyone, the press or the police.
Yeah, at one point, her mother says, just leave us alone. Go find something else to write about.
Not go find our child, but I don't want to be too much of a witch hunt here.
Solomon's lawyer does say that Julia's mother sent an email at one point expressing sympathy. So there is that. Julia's brother, Stan, who owns the Acura that she was driving that day, had loaned her that vehicle for 10 days. Local news tried to catch up to him and ask him some questions, and he really didn't say much except, "I don't know what I can do to help. I feel like everything is out there already."
I don't fault him for that.
Really? I mean, this is his nephew.
Well, all he did was let her borrow a car, unless he has some inside scoop. But
well, no, not even that, but you would think this is his sister's child. Maybe he should get involved. Let me go help search for him. Well, let me pass out flyers. Nothing. Just, everything's already out there. What can I do?
Well, I mean, I guess to me, it's the press is talking to him and trying to get information out of him. He doesn't have any to give to the press. That's how I took the question and the answer.
Well, I took it as he doesn't care. If I had a sibling whose child went missing, I would be out helping to look for that child.
I just don't know in the context of how the reporter was asking if...
We know that he never showed up to help.
No.
And we know... I watched the video where he's giving his answer, and he just... It's another day, and why are you bothering me? I'm kind of headed this way, kind of thing. The attorney for Solomon is Leslie Clay Terry, and he says that Julia's mother, brother, and two close friends have been interviewed by police, but have not spoken publicly or been very forthcoming. They have not been part of any search efforts, nor have they made appeals to the public for help to find Sky. He went on to say, she concocted that hospital story, and when she realized no one believed it, she hired an attorney. She has not helped us one bit. So the police, they don't really have anything to go on. The mother is a suspect, I think, internally for them, but they can't really do anything about it. She's invoked her Fifth Amendment rights. She has a lawyer. This isn't going well.
See, and here's where I disagree. On the basis of she's already left her child in the car once, been charged with reckless endangerment. She's admitted to leaving her child in the car, and now the child is gone. They could have recharged her with reckless endangerment. Second offense. I mean, if she would have been selling crack on the street, second offense gets you jail time. But children, the priorities, whatever. But they could have charged her, come down hard on her, and then maybe, possibly, she would have played ball. But instead, they left her alone. And I think that's a total mistake on the part of law enforcement to not go after her, because I've seen them go after people for minor offenses. And we have a missing child here, and they step away and say our hands are tied.
Right. Well, they never even challenged her. So we won't know how that game of chicken would have played out. They end up searching parks, garbage, and transfer stations, landfills.
Because they're going on the assumption the child's dead.
They're worried that she could have just dumped the boy in the garbage, essentially. They check out a transfer station in Bellevue. They check out the Cedar Hills landfill. Transfer station is where the garbage is taken before the garbage is taken to the landfill. It's kind of an in-between point. They find nothing. In one of the parks, though, someone finds a shoe. And it's a shoe that looks like it would belong to a two-year-old. Forensics team is called in. They retrieve the shoe, and they take it for testing. Unfortunately, it seems to have no connection to the case whatsoever.
They can't even ask the mother, does this shoe belong to your child? Because she's not talking.
She's not saying anything. We need to back up a little bit. And the reason is because so far we're telling you that there's this couple, they're going through divorce. She runs out of gas and stalls, according to her story. And she has to walk to a gas station with her daughter, leaving her son behind. Her son disappears. That's not the entire story. With any couple that's going through divorce, they have their issues. And boy, do they have issues. This is actually what many believe is the catalyst, the thing that pushes her over the edge, which leads to this strange occurrence of her leaving her child behind. He and Juliet opened the store and run it for a while, and they were very successful with it. They were making lots of money. They had a house. They had a condo. They were driving nice vehicles. But she ends up having Miley. When she has Miley, she doesn't work at the store anymore. She stays home with Miley, which, you know, Solomon is good with that. I mean, she was a great help at the store. He felt that was part of the success of the store, but now they have a child. What better person to raise your child than your wife? Unfortunately, this is where things start to get really strange. She develops what is considered to be an extreme version of obsessive compulsive disorder.
She cleans obsessively. I think every time she uses the bathroom, she has to like Windex the window, traits like that, which if you've ever seen the series, My Strange Obsession, you'll get a better grasp on those kind of things.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
All right, back to the show. Julia, in December of 2010, which is prior to the year that Sky goes missing, she filed a motion. Solomon was a month behind on spousal maintenance and child support. As a response, Solomon filed a declaration to oppose her motion. He gives great detail on what was going on in their lives all the way from the time that they opened the store to what was then the present day. And he said they owned a small grocery store in Seattle. It was the King Street Cafe. His mother had loaned him the money. Business was great up until 2005, 2006. And that's when another grocery store opened. Miley was born. Julia stayed home with the child. This is not really a problem until he starts noticing this strange OCD that she develops. And it's not just the OCD. She's cleaning. And she's cleaning for hours, but she won't feed her child, according to Solomon. And what she says is, you have to come home to feed your daughter. And so he said he would have to close the store because he, you know, they've had a downturn at the store. They're not making very much money. And so he has to close the store to go home. And this is after 2 o'clock or so, to pick up his daughter and take her somewhere to eat because they can't eat at home. Julia would not allow them to store food in the refrigerator or the cupboards. So he had to take his daughter outside of the house. In the meantime, Julia would clean. There are a lot of financials that are disclosed here about just how much money they were making originally and how much they made later. And it's a startling difference. When they were doing well, it was $1,300 to $1,800 a day. And later it went to $700 to $1,100 a day. And when you factor in all of their bills, it really makes sense that they wouldn't have much money anymore. I mean, their rent was $20,000 a year. Utilities for the year were about $14,000.
And anyone that has been through a divorce knows that they base your child support off your income at the time. So his child support was probably a large amount because he was making that kind of money. But by the time this is all happening, the store's going under. He's going to fall behind because his business is going down. He doesn't have money to hire a new lawyer to fight to get the child support lowered. So he's between a rock and a hard place there.
He goes a month behind, but he ends up paying up. He catches up. After he gets past that part of his declaration, he goes into the issues he has with his wife. And he says that she is taken to a psychiatrist because she is not taking care of her child properly, and she's obsessively cleaning the house. And the psychiatrist says that she is OCD and depressed. He recommends some medicine. He starts treating Julia to see if he can help her. She starts to get a little better, and things start to look up. And then she gets pregnant with Sky. She doesn't want to take medications anymore. She's pregnant. And then things go down again. Sky is born. She's cleaning the house more obsessively than ever. And to give you an idea, cleaning the house for her, she would not allow anyone to get new clothes. And by new clothes, I don't mean going shopping. I mean just going into the closet. So let's say you wore your blue shirt with yellow stripes today and you decide you want to wear your plaid red shirt tomorrow. You can't do that. Not with Julia there. She will not let that happen. All those shirts, all that stuff in the closet is clean and it's hung perfectly. You can't mess with that. I will wash the shirt you wore today again.
That's called a static display. I used to do that in the military, you know, because you'd get inspected all the time. So you would leave your locker perfect as a static display for the drill sergeant. And you would reuse the clothes and your uniforms that you had on so you wouldn't have to mess up your closet or your locker, because at any point the drill sergeant could come in and just open it up and do an inspection. So that's what she was doing.
She would wash the same 4 loads of laundry 4 times a day, every day. She would just take rags and wet them and wipe down all the surfaces in the house 2 times per day. And they say that she really hated dust. So she was obsessed with cleaning the bathroom mirrors, the toilet, the shower, the tub, any kind of cabinets, the floors, the countertops. She would vacuum.
Oh, this is the detail I like.
Her vacuuming, it really demonstrates just how extreme her OCD was. The lines had to be perfect. And I'm sure some of you at home right now are saying, oh no, I do that. No, the problem is she didn't like anyone coming over to the place because they would mess up the carpet. These carpets needed to have those lines. We're going to start getting into the stuff that gave me chills just reading about it. He loved Julia and she loved him. But at some point, something went wrong with her. He wants to keep the family together. She's getting worse and worse, especially having the 2 children there. It was really all up to him because she needed to clean. And you can't really keep things clean if people use the bathroom, if they're changing their clothes and dropping their clothes
people
on the floor.
People have to live there.
Right. That's a real problem. So she ended up moving all of the beds. We're talking about the little bed for Sky, Miley's bed, moving those into the bedroom with their bed. It all had to be in the same room. And he was not allowed to sleep in there because the beds were made perfect. He had to sleep on the floor. He would get up about 6:30 a.m. every day, and he would go to work. But Julia was requiring Miley to sleep in her room until 2 p.m. As I said before, he had to leave work, pick her up, and take her out to eat. But check this out. He would have to stay at, and this is the usual place they would eat at, the PCC Market, until about 10 o'clock at night because she was cleaning and they could not interrupt that scene. So they would wait for the all clear and then they would go back home and pick Julie up and then take her back out, usually the same place they were just at for hours, so that she could eat. Because if he didn't feed her, she probably wasn't going to feed herself. And then when they got back from her eating, I mean Solomon, Miley, and Sky had to sit on the floor in the foyer and wait for her to call them in 1 by 1 so that they could use the bathroom and get ready for bed and then get into bed. Or in Solomon's case, get on the floor. After they were done with the bathroom, she would then go in and clean that entire bathroom, surfaces, flooring, tubs, shower, you name it, mirror, and then she would go to bed.
It's so sad that they're allowing this behavior and she's running the household. No one can say anything here. And it's obvious that there's a problem. If you can't sleep in your own bed, the family's always like not accept it. They don't, you know, it breaks their hearts to see it, but they go along with it and they know that they can't win that battle. So they just, it's just is what it is. That's how life is now.
He's having to come home to feed them if he wants them fed. He also has to take Miley to preschool twice a week. And he also says that Julia threatens him by saying, you know what? If you're not going to do what I say, then I won't feed the kids. Because she would feed them a little bit. But since they didn't really have any food in the house, he knew that she just wasn't going to feed them. So these kids weren't eating regular meals. She would see a second psychiatrist who diagnosed her again with an extreme form of OCD, depression. They also diagnosed her with bipolar disorder. She would switch her medications up. She would say, this medication's not working. I need new medication. So the doctor would try to work with her, but she didn't want to do any sort of conversation, any working out of her issues. She just wanted medications.
No therapy.
No therapy, exactly. No therapy whatsoever. And Solomon felt like he had no choice but to try and save his children by filing for divorce. But Julia was playing hardball. And she started accusing him of beating his kids and her, and later would accuse him of sexually abusing his daughter. And what this does is it culminates in his not being able to see his kids for a long, long time. And
because she's using this against him, and the courts are saying, well, that he doesn't get visitation rights now because he could be a threat to the children.
He was beating a lot of these accusations as they went, but there came a point in time where they just really had to investigate this. And despite his openness and saying, you know, investigate all you want, I just need to see my kids again, it really put things in slow motion. Eventually, though, in November 2nd, they have what amounts to an 11 to 13 hour arbitration hearing. This is where Solomon is trying to get visitation rights with his children. Eventually, he gets lucky, I guess, and is awarded visitation rights. But it's within a day or so that she calls up her lawyer and says, I'm not doing this.
So they withdraw all the offers and the mediation was for nothing.
What's crazy about this is we come to find out, and Julia admits it, that she had left her kids alone at her place that entire time that they were at the arbitration meeting.
Over 13 hours.
Yeah, who knows? It was between 11 and 13 hours that she was in the meeting. So given travel time or whatever else, who knows how long they were alone.
No additional charge of reckless endangerment for this.
No.
And the courts side with her saying that he doesn't get visitation rights. Okay.
And she admits she's done it other times too. Just leaves them alone.
A 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, or they were even younger at the time, but yeah.
Now, some of you may be thinking, this is Solomon just saying whatever he wants. He can say bad things about her just the way she can say bad things about him.
It's an ugly divorce, right?
It's an ugly divorce. I'm sure they both have fault, but there is some evidence that she was having major issues. Not only did she see a couple of psychiatrists who diagnosed her with these issues, but she was also involuntarily committed to Overlake Hospital in March of 2010. And she had sent him messages, or at least she sent him a message about how she wanted to die. His own daughter was saying things like that, saying, I want to die. And it's because her mother was saying these things all the time.
The kids repeat what the parents say. You know, you cuss enough around your kid starts cussing.
And she also said that she had a dream where she strangled Sky.
And if you take the evidence between her accusing Solomon of beating and sexually abusing their children and her statements, the evidence shows that what Solomon's saying has definitely more credence. And her accusations are not backed up with anything.
Now, I said that there was a time where they basically said, okay, you're not seeing your kids for a while. We're going to check this out. What happened was there were pictures taken of his children and they had marks on their bodies. And she said that he had abused his children. And that's why they had those injuries.
What's the problem with that statement?
Well, the problem was is he wasn't even able to see his kids.
For a long time. And marks only last a little while. So if they were fresh marks, there was only one person that could have made them.
And Solomon is freaked out because, as he says, I'm not with her. I don't know who she's hanging out with. I have no idea who's around my children. I have no idea what she's doing to the children. And so he feels powerless. And he has to wait on the courts. Now, eventually, everything pans out in his favor. But it's kind of too late because his two-year-old son, he doesn't know where he's at. They don't even know that he was in the vehicle that day. And when you think about all the issues that she has with her suicidal thoughts, with her disorders, it's very well possible that she could have coached her daughter to say that Skye was in the car. The evidence of this is she had a blog and she posted videos to that blog. It's downright scary watching a parent talk to their child the way she does. There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
So we go from her leaving Skye in a car and possibly Skye being abducted or walking off to, do we even think Skye was ever in that car that day?
Now, when you don't know where the crime scene is, where the abduction happened or the murder or whatever this was, you don't know how to properly investigate it. Now you're just searching in the dark without a light. One of the possibilities here is that since she wasn't feeding the kids properly, maybe he starved to death.
Yeah. And I want to make this clear because I watched the Nancy Grace episode on this case. And Nancy was, of course, being obnoxious as usual, you know, yelling over Solomon and anyone that was on the show. But Nancy was almost invoking or trying to infer that her obsessive compulsive behavior would translate into violent behavior. And I don't want to come across as that at all. But with her extreme case, it is possible that she neglected the children because we'd seen it before. She'd already been charged with reckless endangerment. I think Nancy was a little bit more on the, she did something to Skye, like beat him, got rid of him, like a Casey Anthony kind of style. Whereas I don't think that would be the case. I think it would be, there was no one feeding the children for months on end because Solomon was no longer in their life.
She wasn't even caring for herself very well because she had an incident where she blacked out in the yard. She hadn't eaten for a long time, and she blacked out. A neighbor had to come over and check on her, and then that neighbor called for assistance. So it's not just Solomon's word. There are other people that are seeing issues. Even her friend that picked her up at the gas station on the day that supposedly Skye went missing, even her friend said, "Where the hell is Skye?" She said she was shocked.
She doesn't have a phone on her? Like, I mean, that's just standard procedure for any parent. Is to have a phone on them. This is where I agreed with Nancy Grace's, appalling behavior. Is she was screaming like, how did she not have a phone? What kind of mother would do this? And da 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 da. And I'm like, I kind of agree with her for once. I'm like, how does this happen? How do you go out when you're taking a sick child to the hospital? You don't bring a phone, and then you leave the kid in the car and wander off because you don't have a phone. It's a mess. And if she actually was telling the truth, she's still guilty of a lot of things.
On Julia's Facebook, she had one picture of Sky and many pictures of Miley. You think, who knows why that is, right? Maybe she was into taking pictures of her daughter because she was more interactive, or she knew her better. You know, Sky was new. I don't know if I buy that, but when you go post disappearance of Sky, other frightening things reveal themselves, which is while Solomon's out trying to find his son, organizing searches, passing out flyers, she is posting to Craigslist and creating a profile on seekingarrangement.com because she wants to find a guy who will give her an allowance every month of $3,000 to $5,000. Let that sink in, because her child's missing, but she wants a sugar daddy. She will find a man, although I wouldn't call him a sugar daddy. His name is Alan J. Morgan, and he has an extensive criminal record that includes violence against police officers, willful cruelty to a child, which was his own child, a child that was removed from his custody when he lived in Florida.
Perfect. Great boyfriend.
Battery, domestic violence, chemical dependency, and assault. Well, he and Julia hit it off, and she gets pregnant with another child.
That's great. I'm happy. Cigars all around.
Child Protective Services is notified that her new baby is at risk because she refuses to seek help for her multiple issues.
Not that there's a man in the house that is a danger to children, but yeah, okay.
Oh, no, they have it out, and police are called. He's arrested. He ends up getting sent off, and they have this order that they are not allowed to meet anymore. And she violates that order. She goes as far as to say it's only his drinking. It's when he drinks, he becomes a different person. And when he's not drinking, he's perfect. He's fine. Don't blame him. It's the alcohol.
But Solomon's the horrible father.
Now, as far as I know, and this is something that was difficult for me to find, but apparently the baby is okay to stay with her mother. So it's still in the family. I can't make those determinations. All I can say is I don't feel comfortable with her having access to any child. The good news for Solomon is he is investigated to the nth degree, and he ends up looking pretty good in the end. I mean, he's not without his faults, but he's a guy who really has good intentions. And he is awarded custody of his daughter, who had been placed in foster care after some amount of time.
After numerous offenses and allegations and family services calls, the system finally stepped in and did the right thing. Yeah, that's when he finally gets his daughter, who's probably so screwed up that she's going to need a lifetime of counseling. Great.
December 5th, 2011 is when he's granted full custody of Miley. One thing that happens is, you know, he gives these interviews. He's always very soft-spoken. I don't know if it's because that's how he always has been. It's probably true. But it could also be because he's been through so much. But he says something that got some in the public riled up. He says, "I'm going to treat her like a princess." And trust me, I'm reading these posts on the internet to get people's reactions, and so many people out there say that's disgusting. She's not a princess. She's a young lady. You know, this isn't a fantasy. That he should be treating this seriously because she's been through so much. He's been through so much. But all I can say is I'm not in his shoes. Just reading about all the stuff that he and his family have been through, how are you supposed to tell him how to react? He's not doing anything bad. He's taking care of her.
I mean, maybe it's a poor choice of words, but I think what he meant was, I'm going to try to make up for lost time. I'm going to spoil her. I'm going to give her everything that I can. Maybe princess wasn't the best term he could have used, but I think if you don't give a knee-jerk reaction to it, you might understand that he was trying to say that I'm going to attempt to be the best father I can be.
This brings me to my closing thoughts. It's all about intent. You know, we have people running into us and saying, you shouldn't use this phrase, you shouldn't say it like that. Justin and I mean well. We're not always going to say things exactly the way you want us to say them.
And sometimes we're reading them off from a police report. So we're reading it the way it is. And I'm trying to focus on getting the details right, not focus on what might come off offensive to people.
Yeah, so we never mean any offense. And certainly if you watch any videos with Julia and her daughter, it's frightening. But yet, if you hear Solomon talk, he doesn't even bash his ex-wife. He says things like, she used to be normal, and then these things started affecting her, and she doesn't have control of them. She's making bad decisions, but she doesn't have control. So he doesn't even say that she's evil or that she's vile or someone should do something to her. He just wishes she could have gotten help and that he wishes they could have stayed together. And that's the intention here. The intention of Solomon is to be there for his family. He wants to have his son back. He wants to be there for his daughter. And Julia, the whole time, again, I don't have her issues, so I don't quite understand them. All I can say is that let's go with Solomon. Our first instinct is when someone is likely to have caused the disappearance of their own child, we want to get angry. And certainly I did. When I read about all these things, I get angry and I wish someone would do something. We also have to take into account that mental illness is something that many of us can't quite understand or even comment well on. So it's really just a sad situation. And unfortunately, if she never comes clean about what happened, I think this is going to remain a mystery because her family hasn't come forward. They haven't tried to clear the air. As far as I know, they've never tried to put any pressure on her to come clean. And I think as long as no one confronts her, we're never going to have those answers, which is really sad.
Steve Milet is the new chief of police. His first day on the job, he has a picture of Sky on his desk. And he hopes every day that he can solve this case under his watch. And I hope for his sake he can. Personally, we see investigators, prosecutors, police go after people for far less with far less evidence. No, we always want law enforcement to do the right thing. We always want them to, you know, dot their I's, cross their T's, have all the probable cause, do everything right to really stick it to the criminal or the person that's at fault. Yet I see them use tactics in other cases, drugs, whatever, and they're able to get convictions and arrests with nothing. And here we have a parent with a record of reckless endangerment. I would just hope that they could charge her with that again through her own admission, flex on her that way. See if they can get anything out of her. Because right now, they're not doing anything and they say their hands are tied. And I don't like that.
They say that the search for Sky has never ended. They looked at multiple angles, which they're doing without assistance because they've called out to Julie and just said, please come in and talk with us. She refuses. They looked at her father who came into the United States and visited that very year that Sky went missing.
They thought maybe she'd given him to her father and he'd taken him out of the country.
Some wonder if she had sort of adopted him out through a church somehow or something like that. They wondered if there was some secret way to adopt a child out through the seeking arrangement site. I mean, the police have investigated all of these angles and they keep coming up empty. They feel like they can close the books on those angles and say, that's not what happened. But they don't have the final answer. They say until she comes forward, things feel like they're at a standstill. They've received thousands of tips, but they just don't pan out. It really is reminiscent of the Kyron Horman case, where you have a woman who took a child and supposedly did this or that, and then, oh, I don't know what happened. I don't know why he's missing. And the police say, we'll never stop looking. We'll find him eventually. But it feels like they're powerless. It feels like the only person with the answer is holding all the cards. And as long as they're not playing, everything's at a standstill. Solomon Metalwala is spending a lot of time with his daughter, and he says he values that time, especially after all that he's been through and what she's been through. And he said, there's no doubt in my mind that I do believe 100% that Julia knows what happened to Skye. And he said, each time I look at a child, I have to take a second look. Is that Skye? Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.